KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Well, it's Joe Pott in for Matt Pauley here on this very, very frigid Monday night. And hopefully everybody gets to be, well, I guess let's hope most everyone gets to be back in at home and safe tonight. As you heard from Roger and from Maria, the roads still aren't great. I thankfully have not had to venture out. So you're actually hearing me from home tonight. Matt Pauley is ill, so we wish Matt a speedy recovery. Hope he starts to get feeling better soon. But yeah, so lots of NFL to talk about, at least in this little opening segment here, kind of recapping what went down yesterday. There wasn't a ton left to play for yesterday. There certainly wasn't a lot of playoff spots on the line. Whether it was there was a couple of things seeding wise, but nothing major with the exception of that Sunday night game last night. Denver removed all questions and possibilities that existed in the AFC. So a Denver win, they were the only team that held their own destiny, right? So once they beat Kansas City, that took away the possibility of the Bengals getting in. The Bengals didn't have to weren't any longer worried with any other games or results or anything like that, because the Bengals certainly were Chiefs fans yesterday. But the Broncos beating up on the Chiefs, which I think everybody expected. As you know, the Chiefs had wrapped up the AFC, so nobody playing as far as Mahomes, Travis Kelce not playing, just a lot of starters out. They were resting everybody, being very safe, of course, as you would expect. So that took care of the AFC, and then the NFC was coming down to that game last night in Detroit, which I was actually interested in. I'm not the biggest NFL fan. I like to watch. I like, don't have a team, if you will, haven't had a team for a while. But so I was interested in this game, and it turned out to kind of be a snoozer. It wasn't the great. It wasn't as tight of a game as I expected it to be. I thought it was going to be a much more competitive game as it was. Detroit ended up winning that game over the Vikings 31-9. And with that, that's to the victors go all of the spoils in the NFC when it comes to that, right? So the Lions win the division, which is minimal, means nothing. But what means a lot is they're the number one seed in the NFC, which gets them home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And what's crazy is, and not crazy necessarily, but what is, I guess, tough is Minnesota has a great season, 14-3, and they're relegated all the way back to the 5 seed because, of course, the division winners end up getting seeded over top. So the Vikings have to go on the road now, and they'll face the Rams on Monday night next week, while the Detroit Lions get to wait and see who they play next week, and they will be at home throughout the NFC playoffs. So it was a game with so much riding on it, so many implications, and again, I really expected it to be a very tight, competitive game, and it just wasn't, you know, from that standpoint, from the competitive side. Pretty cool. I was sort of rooting for the Lions to get there. The Lions have never been the number one overall seed. So they will be the number one overall seed in the NFC for the first time. So that's kind of cool. And very cool that they get to have, they get to wait and host a playoff game and, see who they play next week. The rest of the NFL, I can tell you, the rest of the playoffs kind of look like this next week anyway. For Saturday, it'll be Chargers, Texans, Steelers, Ravens. The Chargers, Texans, the afternoon game. Steelers, Ravens would be the evening game. Sunday is the Broncos, Bills. Yeah, the Broncos in the playoffs for the first time in 8 seasons, and they've got to go play at Buffalo at the number 2 seed in in the AFC. So yeah, great, nice reward for getting back to the playoffs if you are the Broncos. The Packers and the Eagles are the afternoon, and then the evening game on Sunday is Washington and Tampa Bay. And then, as I mentioned, that Monday night is going to be the Vikings and the Rams. Give you a rundown of what we have got going on for you tonight here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Again, sitting in for Matt Pauly, who's a little bit under the weather today, so hopefully he has a chance to rest and get better. We'll talk a lot of college, basketball, football, all of the above. Earl Austin Jr. is going to kick us off coming up at 6:20. So our second segment here, we'll talk to the awesome one, who is, of course, a color commentator. He is a member of the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. I think the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, many times over. So he's a great guest. We love to talk to Earl Austin Jr. We'll chat with him coming up at 6:20. We can even talk some Lindenwood basketball. Lindenwood just over at SIUE this past weekend as they continue their transition to the Division I level. Jerry Palm's going to join us from CBS. That'll be in the latter half of the 6 o'clock hour, so about 6:35 or so. We'll talk to Jerry Palm. We'll also talk to Nate Gatter. Of course, you hear him here on KMOX. Heard him for the last couple of seasons on the St. Louis City Soccer Report. He's taken on a much more national profile doing college football, college basketball. He's even done some NFL games, did his first NFL game a couple weeks back. So we'll get to visit with Nate Gatter. We'll visit with Randy Molman as well. Again, as I said, the theme's kind of been a lot of college. That's who was able to join us tonight, so we appreciate it. So Randy can talk a lot about about Mizzou football. We'll kind of wrap up what he thought of this Mizzou football season and, of course, how it finished out for the Tigers. He can also talk on some Mizzou basketball, some SIUE basketball. So we'll talk with him on all of those things, all that and above for Randy Molman. And that's our lineup here for tonight for this Graybar Sports Open Line on a very snowy Monday. I hope that you are safe. As I said, hope you can avoid the roads as much as possible. I've been able to avoid the roads for the last 2 days. My full-time gig's at SIU Edwardsville, and we were closed earlier today, so that's been nice. So hope it's been the same for you. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Earl Austin Jr. is first up for us tonight on the Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Joe Pott, sitting in for Matt Pauly, and we're coming right back on KMOX. Joe Pott back in on the Graybar Sports Open Line on a Monday night here in St. Louis. I am coming at you live from my basement office. That's how we do it because it's pretty crappy weather. And I am thankful that we have the wonderful technology and Kyle Sixta back in the studio tonight. And I were able to hook it up and it sounds great. And I'm glad to be able to do it. Matt Pauly taking some time off under the weather a little bit, so we wish him a speedy recovery, certainly. And as I mentioned, it just the way it turned out, we're going to talk a lot of college tonight. So that's just the way it kind of shook out tonight when we started putting together who we were going to have a chance to visit with and talk to tonight. And we'll get things started here with a name and a voice that you hear often here on KMOX, and that would be the awesome one, Earl Austin Jr., and we can talk all kinds of college basketball, but thanks for taking some time, Earl.
Joe, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Happy New Year to you. And the Billikens certainly feel like right now starting to come around, maybe starting to gel, starting to click. It's literally what the non-conference schedule is for, right? To get you prepared to get to this point, and at least through the first couple of games, they've looked really strong.
It really has. Like you said, we had some pretty tough competition and took some tough losses, and we had some injuries, and that kind of all contributed to our up-and-down non-conference season. But you can see our trip to Phoenix, we lost to Grand Canyon, a very good team, but lost at the buzzer. But you could see us really coming around, and I think it's kind of carried over. And then you win our first conference road game at Fordham pretty convincingly, and then you come home and win a home opener against a very good St. Joe's team. Crowd was really enthused, and guys really starting to play well together at both ends of the court. So, as you said, things are starting to come together, and you hope it continues.
I was listening. I heard the post game from Fordham, and you and Rammer and Coach were talking about. It's, I think Rammer said something like, it's like grabbing that gold bar, right? If you get because a win's a win, a road win's big, and a road win in conference, it's hard to beat that, right? And to go on the road and start league play like that's huge.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It is. Road wins in conference play are just so hard. And if you're going to compete for any conference championship, whether it's at any level, you got to win. You got to win at home first, majority, if not all your home games, but you got to find some wins on the road. So to get that first one under your belt was a big one as well. And it was even more important to follow it up with a home victory against St. Joe's. I said going off the air, that was a good one to win at New York, but we can't give it back right away by losing at home as well. So I think to follow up with a very impressive 40-minute performance, and I think that's what we've seen. Guys are starting to really put things together for a full 40 minutes, and that's what you're going to need to win the games in this conference. It's pretty tough from top to bottom, and you really need a good – you know, you have to have the execution and a good effort, and I think that's what they're starting to commit to now.
Earl Austin Jr. is in his 34th year on the broadcast team for the St. Louis University Billikens. Earl, give me your impressions just so far of, what you've seen from Coach Josh Schertz and kind of what you expect he will do, he'll put together here as time goes along at St. Louis University.
I think you saw a real good example the last two games, especially the other night, the ball movement, the way the guys share the basketball, get open shots, really value it. You could see it start to come into place as well. Guys are scoring on backdoor cuts. Guys are screening for each other, getting themselves open, and just a commitment to playing not with each other, but for another. And I think what you're also seeing is that on the defensive end now, guys are doing a great job of helping each other, making the extra effort, doing things like that. I think folks got a sneak preview of what Josh Schertz's basketball was going to be like when they watched the Indiana State run and during the NIT. You got a chance to watch all six games and how enthused the crowd was in Terre Haute. And I think what we saw the other night against St. Joe's at the Chaffetz Center, I think that was the first indication, although it was like our ninth home game, but of what it can be like. The crowd was really, you could see it pop for really the first time, and that was because of some of the great team basketball that was exhibited. There was one possession, which I even tweeted about, where all five men touched the basketball and ended up in a Robbie Avila three-point shot, which kind of sealed the game, but about 3-4 minutes to go, and the crowd just went crazy, and I think that's kind of a harbinger of what it can be like in the future under Josh Schertz here at the Billikens.
That's just right out of Hoosiers, right?
It was fun. I mean, I love it really was. Five-man basketball, I mean, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, but when you see that ball zipping around, and I even saw the postgame, like one of my favorite teams ever was the 2014 Spurs, where they just moved that ball, and that was kind of an example of that. He said, maybe the guys did that on their own. That's when they start, when it's not offense, when they just start reading and reading what the defense is doing, and then they're just kind of like, then it looks like a symphony just playing music, and that's when it's fun to watch and listen to.
But I imagine as a coach, too, there's not much more gratifying than that, as you said, not necessarily a play call. It's just when they start clicking, they start knowing where each other's going to be, and that ball is moving around and zipping around, like you said. I always hear when I talk to Coach Baroni at SIUE, he always, if something goes wrong, a lot of times he'll talk about, boy, that ball got stuck, right? It just wasn't moving, there was no reversal, whatever the case is, but especially when it's happening just on the fly and organically like that.
Oh, yeah. Like, say, there's anchors when the ball just stops, and then there's propellers, and those five propellers moving that basketball. And then when you have it going like that, that's when your shooting percentages, because everybody's touching the basketball. It's like a power source. Everybody get a chance to feel it. And it's the same thing on the defensive end. When your man gets beat on the dribble, somebody helps. Then they rotate it out to that guy. Then that guy makes an extra effort and somebody. So you hear about that. play as one on the offense, but it's the same thing on the defense. And frankly, if you're going to win in the Atlantic 10 conference, that's the level of ball you're going to have to play. Not only the execution, but the extra effort plays that you have to make on the boards and getting out to a shooter and things like that. So I think they're starting to figure out this is what you need to compete at that high level for 40 minutes, not 20 or 30, if you're going to try to compete at the highest level in that conference we're in.
Chatting with Earl Austin Jr. here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly, and they've got a Wednesday matchup coming up with St. Bonaventure at Chaffetz Arena. St. Louis has been very good offensively through the first couple of games. Bonaventure is a super strong defensive team, and again, they've had another good non-conference year. And it just feels like Bonaventure is always going to be one of those teams, at least the last four or five seasons, that's going to fight for one of those top four seeds in the league.
Well, Mark Schmidt is that when you talk about St. Bonaventure, you start with Mark Schmidt. He's been there for I don't know how many years, 15 or whatever. And he's one of the most well-respected coaches in the country. He's consistently put winning teams in Olean, New York, been to the tournament, won our conference. And he just does a fabulous job. They play with toughness. He doesn't play a lot of times. You don't play five or six guys. He's got big, strong guards, and they're good defensively. They're a good unit as well, good size, got a big guy in the middle and everything. And that's always going to be a tough game, whether it's here in St. Louis or Olean. It doesn't get any better than Mark Schmidt when it comes to A-10 coaches. And it so happens, both teams happen to be 2-0. In league play. There's only three of us right now at 2-0. Richmond, I believe, is the third team right now, and it just shows how topsy-turvy this league can be. So an opportunity for one team to be 3-0 and have sole possession going into the second week of league play.
Well, and we talked about it, right? We talked about getting those wins on the road. I'm a Dayton guy talking about the A-10. They go on the road and absolutely got beat up by George Washington over the weekend.
Yeah, by 20, and George Washington was picked last. That just shows there's no easy game. You go on the road in somebody else's building, you have to be ready to play. It doesn't matter where they're picked or who you're playing against. I think you're going to see a lot of that as well. You know, I saw VCU winning to Chicago and got a big win at Loyola the other day after losing at St. Bonaventure, close at a last second shot, and they go in. Yeah, you got to take care of business at home, but you go on the road. So I think that's why it's so important for us to get this one on the road, because we got to go to Richmond for back-to-back games at VCU, where we've never won at the Siegel Center. And then Richmond, that third team, that other team, that's 2-0. That's who the Billikens play on Saturday. The following Saturday, we play at VCU on Wednesday. So we got back-to-back games at Richmond. So that heightens the importance of this home game at St. Bonaventure to try to get one.
Yeah, my goodness, that is definitely tough. Last couple of minutes here with Earl Austin Jr., I do want to ask you about your alma mater, the Lindenwood Lions, who I saw this weekend over at SIUE, but talk about a defensive team. They really put the clamps down. It was a game that SIUE ended up winning, but that was one of those grinded-out defensive games between the Cougars and the Lions. And I've said a lot that I do feel like the school, the athletic department, they are doing – all of the right things as they work through this incredibly tough transition from Division II to Division I. But I like where Kyle Gerdeman's got the basketball team going.
I think so too. And also Amy Egan on the women's side. Yeah, they're 3-1 in league play. And Kyle's done a good job. I know they played some competitive games against some, Power Four conferences. And they're 1-3 in league play, but I think in his third year, I think top to bottom, this was probably his most talented roster. Had a few injuries. We're without two starters right now the last couple games, and that's tough on the road at Eastern, at SIUE, who are two good teams. But I think he's put together a pretty good team. They got some good athletes. Marquise Browning's one of the most explosive players in the OVC. Reggie Bass, who hadn't played the two games, is a good player as well. And then Jadis Jones from New Madrid, who's Mr. Basketball, has done a nice job, one of the top freshmen in the OVC. So, yeah, and once again, just like A-10, the OVC is so competitive from top to bottom. You really have to win your home games and see what you can do on the road. But I think they can turn things. They got a couple home games coming up, and I kind of like, once they get everybody healthy, they can do some things in the league.
Yeah, I made the comment that Jadis Jones, I bet Simo's kicking themselves for letting him get away. He's in their backyard, came out of New Madrid.
Yeah, well, I think he was going to go to Coastal Carolina to play football. That was his original commitment. And then he decided around the winter, I'm going to play basketball. And then Linda Wood got in, and he's done a great job. He's been the OVC Freshman of the Week, I think, three or four times. I've called it the Jadis Jones OVC Freshman of the Week.
I think he might have gotten it today as well. Sure.
He probably has. I mean, he's consistently 12, 13, 7, 8 rebounds, and he's been a great find for Kyle.
Well, Earl, you're the best. I appreciate you checking in, certainly on some short notice, too. Good luck on Wednesday to the Billikens, and certainly that tough run into Virginia as well. But we appreciate you, man.
I appreciate it, too. And finally, one thing real quick. Teacher at SIU, just a shout-out to Rayshon Taylor, one of my favorite players in some St. Louis metro area. Glad to see him healthy and doing great things as well. I wanted to get that out there for you, too, as well.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and I will pass that along to him as well in case he doesn't hear it. So thanks, man.
No problem.
Earl Lawson Jr. with us here, kicking things off on the Graybar Sports Open Line. We'll keep things moving here. We've got Jerry Palm coming up, so more college, lots of college tonight. That's the way it shakes out here on this snowy, cold Monday evening. Jill Pott in for Matt Pauly. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Jerry Palm joins us on the other side of the break as the Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on KMOX. Joe Potty in for Matt Pauly on this Monday night. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line. It turns out to be accidental, but it turns out to be very college sports heavy tonight, which is all right with me. Of course, that's my full-time gig anyway, but pleased to welcome in here on KMOX is Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. He covers college basketball, college football, and we're glad that he's joining us here tonight. Jerry, thanks for doing this on short notice tonight. We appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I want to start, if it's okay. I know you're a Purdue alum, but I'd like to start with Barry Odom, who's the new head coach at Purdue. Of course, folks here in St. Louis know him as the former head coach at Missouri and then went on to UNLV. But what is he getting himself into at Purdue? And then flip side, what do you think Purdue's getting in Barry Odom?
Well, what he's getting himself into is a bit of a rebuild. Fortunately, it's a lot easier to rebuild now than it was 10 years ago when, you know, transfers had to sit out a year. You were lucky to find transfers. It wasn't such a thing as a portal. And you just had to recruit your way into getting better. And that's a slow process. And now, you know, the way the rules are with player movement, it's a lot easier to rebuild. And you could see that at Indiana this year. With Kurt Cignetti coming in and turning over a roster, brought a bunch of kids with him from James Madison and ended up with one of the best seasons in the history of Indiana. That's probably too much to expect to be a normal thing. So, you know, I don't think Purdue's expectations are that high, but, you know, they're at a floor. They just had the worst season probably in the entire history of the program. You know, just 2 years ago, they were in a Big Ten championship game. So, It's not really far to get Purdue back to a level of, you know, competitiveness where, you know, they're in bowl games and, you know, the occasional, you know, very good season. But that's what Purdue fans are used to, you know, generally being competitive and then, you know, having the occasional great year. But, you know, there's still going to be a climb for that. And, you know, as for Barry, I think we were pretty excited at Purdue to get him. He's been a pretty successful head coach. He was there, and he was at UNLV, where they hardly ever win. And he seems to fit, you know, personality-wise, the culture of the school, the culture of the athletic department. And, so we're pretty optimistic that he can get things turned around, if not instantaneously, in relatively short order.
Sure. And you referenced, obviously, what Indiana has done. And just as an example of how quick you can sort of make that change or you know, get things turned around. The other side of that is it sustainable for someone like in Indiana?
Maybe. It depends. I mean, every program got built from something. So, you know, sure, why not? But, we'll have to see. Purdue does not have the benefit of Indiana's schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Indiana ended up with the worst schedule for a major conference team that I can remember. You know, it's that not only did they have three, you know, low-level non-conference games, and you can't blame them for that. They've been bad for a number of years. Why schedule up? But then they ended up being – it worked out so that they ended up with a really poor Big Ten schedule. And, you know, they had Ohio State, of course, which they didn't win that game and weren't particularly close in the end. And then they get Michigan in what was a down year for Michigan. But everybody else, I think they only had one team on their schedule win as many as seven games in the regular season. So, you know, Purdue's not going to have that next year. Purdue's going to have another difficult schedule. Notre Dame's on it again in non-conference play. So 11-1, he's going to have to bring in like an NFL team. Go 11-1 against Purdue or at Ohio State. Not same thing. Anyways, so it's the expectations aren't going to be 11-1, I don't think, at Purdue. But that's not a realistic expectation anyway, and Indiana was pretty fortunate to be able to pull that off. And credit to them for being able to pull it off.
Jerry Palm from CBS Sports with us here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauly here on this Monday night. Do you feel like the committee got it right or got it close to right as far as the college football playoff bracket is concerned?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, yes. And they could have picked some other teams and still have been right. It's just not that cut and dried. The week before the final selections, Miami lost, and they could have put Miami ahead of Alabama. There was a case for that. And there was a case for Alabama ahead of Miami, and that's what they went with. And what they told us was it had to do with the quality of Alabama's wins, which was fair, right? I mean, they had some great wins, and they played a better schedule, and even though they had one more loss, you could make that case. SMU lost the following week, and SMU's resume, if you will, for the committee looked a lot more like Miami's than it did Alabama. They didn't have the big quality wins, and neither did Miami. Their losses were a little better than Miami's, but everything they said about Alabama in comparison to Miami applied just as much to SMU, but they didn't make the same decision the next week. So that felt inconsistent to me, and I don't really, like I said, you could make the case for Alabama. They chose SMU, and you could make the case for SMU. So I mean, I would have been okay either way, but the way the last 2 weeks played out felt inconsistent to me.
When we're looking at, you know, going forward, I think Nick Saban was probably the most outspoken as far as not rewarding the conference champions necessarily. Do you agree with that, or do you think they should be rewarded as conference champs?
I don't think the bye did them any favors.
Right.
So maybe they don't want to be rewarded that way. You know, it's funny. The NFL has been doing this for quite a while. And we just watched the game last night where 14-2 teams held it out, where one was going to be the number one seed as a division champion and the other one was going to be a 5 because they didn't win their division. Now, the teams that get a bye in the college football playoff, though, it's different because you're not just off a week and you're resting up, you're off almost a month because those conference championship games are the first weekend in December, and then they're playing their first game New Year's Day. So that's a lot of time off. You can get kind of rusty. You've got the holidays in there too, so your team is probably scattered for part of that time. And I don't think the bye is a real big advantage. So – you know, the schedule, and I don't think if you're going to play the playoff games and bowl games, you know, those quarterfinal rounds, then you're going to have to do them New Year's Day, that weekend. So unless they can create a more fair schedule for the teams to get byes, that's, to me, a bigger problem than who you give those byes to.
Yeah, it certainly didn't feel like there was any kind of advantage to being that that team. It's the rest versus rust kind of argument.
Arizona State's the only one that really
that made a game,
competed all the way in their game among the teams that got five.
Yeah, no question about it. Do you think that Texas having a pseudo home game coming up against Ohio State, does that give them any kind of advantage being in Dallas?
No, because Ohio State's going to fill that stadium. So if they were playing, you know, Indiana, yeah, fine. It's going to be a 90% Texas crowd, but Ohio State fans are going to be there. They may not outnumber Texas, but they're certainly not going to – they're not going to be a low percentage of Ohio State fans in that audience. So, and the biggest problem, though, that Texas has is that Ohio State looks like a machine in these playoffs. That team that beat Tennessee – and then turn around and beat Oregon as badly as they did.
That's the best team
in college football. That's the best team in college football. The Ohio State that plays like that, they have the talent to play like that. They've always had the talent, and it shows up quite a bit. But that was as impressive a team as I've seen in a postseason game that mattered as what Ohio State has done in these first two games. And so if I'm Texas, I'm much more worried about the football team showing up than the fans.
Right, right. No question about it. I didn't mean to make this all college football. I'll add a college basketball for you right before we let you go here. Your top four seeds in the most recent bracketology, Iowa State, Tennessee, Auburn, Duke. Is there one that you feel like is more complete than the other, than the others?
I really like Auburn because of Johnny Broome. I mean, that kid is on his way to a national player of the year, it looks like. And that's the guy that everybody else is going to have to figure out how to deal with. And in a way, he's not the same kind of player necessarily, even though he's a big, but it's kind of like with Zach Edey and Purdue the last 2 years. You know, you've got to figure out what you're going to do with him, how you're going to try and neutralize him. You're going to game plan around him. And with Auburn, I think that's the guy, Johnny Broome is the guy you've got to game plan around. And you have a guy like that. It makes you pretty hard to beat.
Well, my full-time gig is at SIU Edwardsville as a broadcaster and SID, and I had to see Broome in the league here as he started with Morehead State, so I remember him, and he's really good.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I didn't realize he started at Morehead State.
He started at Morehead State, so yeah. So wow. Imagine a talent like that playing at a mid-major league. He was obviously head and shoulders above a lot of folks in the league, and maybe it gave him a chance to grow up and be ready for what was to come. But yeah, he certainly has grown into those shoes. He's really good. Jerry, I appreciate you doing this on short notice. It was great to get a chance to catch up, talk to you a little bit. Like I said, didn't necessarily mean it to be all college football, but I appreciate you going with the flow.
Yeah, that's all right. Talk to you anytime. It sounds good. Anyways, I'm just happy to talk to you anytime.
Yeah, very nice. Jerry Palm, you can follow him on X, JP Palm CBS. Follow him there on X, college football, college basketball, all of the above. Thanks to him. We will finish things up here on this 6 o'clock hour on the other side of the break. We've got more to do in the 7 o'clock hour, of course. And it's, as I said, going to be a lot of college, and that's all right. That's just the way it shakes out here tonight. So one more segment to go here in the 6 o'clock hour. Kyle Sixt is back in the studio at KMOX. I'm Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauly tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the 6 on the other side of the break. It's KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauly tonight. Happy you are with us. And hopefully Matt is, I hope he's not listening because I hope he's getting some rest tonight because I know he's a little bit under the weather. So hopefully he is doing everything he needs to do to rest and recover and recuperate and get better and be back here in this. Well, it wouldn't be this seat because that'd be weird if he was in my basement, but in the Sports Open Line seat tomorrow evening. Glad you're along. And as I said, just sort of accidentally, an accidental all college program tonight. Again, not on purpose, but that's the way it shakes out with Jerry Palm here in this first hour and Earl Austin Jr. talking Billikens basketball. We'll talk to Nate Gatter And Randy Mullman coming up in our 7 o'clock hour, and a lot of college between. And we can talk a little NFL with Nate as well, and just catch up with Nate, to be honest. Doesn't have to even be about a lot of sports, because I haven't had a chance to talk to Nate in a while. And as I mentioned off the top, Nate, who has been doing a lot of stuff here at KMOX, and of course you hear him a lot on the St. Louis Soccer Report, but he's taken on a real national profile and is really becoming one of the top play-by-play guys on national radio when it comes to college football, college basketball, even the NFL, as I mentioned. So really cool, and I'll be glad just to catch up with him and chat with him about that and how things are going. And I think that I'm sure that you would be glad to hear from him as well. So we'll do that coming up. He's going to be at 7:20, I believe, if I had it right. 7:20 for him. And then it'll be Randy Mullman coming up at 7:35. And Randy can talk a variety of things. A lot of Mizzou. He is the in-house voice of Faurot Field Memorial Stadium, the year of all the football games. Been doing that for quite a while. He's more recently become the, I guess, most time voice in-house at Mizzou Arena, too, for men's basketball. So he does a lot of that. But also calls some play-by-play. He does play-by-play for us over at SIU Edwardsville, calling our women's basketball games. He's done several men's basketball games for me over the years. He did a lot of PA work at SIUE. So he's done a lot for us at SIUE as well, and just an all-around good sports guy. So it'll be good to catch up with Randy as well and chat about a lot of different things. Don't know that we'll have time for calls. Don't really think we'll have time for calls tonight. If we do, it may be the very last segment of the 7 o'clock hour, if you want to try to get in there, but I would not count on that. We're pretty full with our four guests that we have tonight. And so I don't think we'll have a big chance there. I am looking forward to, just thinking back on our conversation that we were having with Jerry Palm, I am looking forward to the semifinal games in the college football playoff. I have enjoyed, for the most part, the playoff. I wish, as we talked about, that there were a couple of more competitive games. And I honestly don't also think that, I don't know. I hope that Ohio State and Texas is competitive. I'm not a huge Ohio State fan, so I would like to see Texas come out of that one. But I know it will be tough because of the way that Ohio State is playing. A really, obviously, best game, probably maybe the best game of the playoffs so far, was that Arizona State game. Thought they were going to get past Texas in that game, coming all the way back and then forcing overtime. And that was about the most fun. I was glued to almost that entire game from start to finish. And I wish they were all like that. But as you know, as many others have said, it's not like we don't get games like that in playoffs in other sports. It just happens that way, that we get some of those blowout games, and it feels like a total mismatch. And you know, it feels like maybe, as a lot of people are saying, maybe one of those teams didn't belong. It's a little bit different, a little more subjective on the college level than it is, say, NFL level or other sports, where it's pretty clear. You get to a certain point, you know, you're in the playoffs. You get to a certain wins or point total, whatever that is, whatever sport that is. It's not like somebody is making those selections. Obviously, they are at the NCAA basketball schedule, and we have our own arguments there and who should be and who shouldn't be in the NCAA basketball tournament as well. So, but it makes it a lot of fun, and it makes for a good conversation. 7 o'clock hour is coming up here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Again, Nate Gatter and Randy Mullman to join us there. And we'll have some more fun here in the 7 o'clock hour, talking a lot more college sports here on this very cold, very snowy Monday evening. Matt Pauly under the weather tonight, Joe Pott sitting in, and one more hour to come, and we'll be back right after the news. The Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It's Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly here on this Monday night. Happy you're along with us. Matt feeling a little bit under the weather, so sitting in tonight and holding things down, doing the best we can. I was just kind of perusing some Twitter here, perusing some X here as we sat in the break, and was noticing, I saw on another timeline a tweet from Taylor Russolino, kicker, who was with the Battlehawks prior to COVID, so the original iteration of the St. Louis Battlehawks. And he's making a case to come back. He tweeted 5 hours ago, seeing the team is in need of the kicker position, why don't we run it back and pick up right where we left off prior to COVID separating us? I was on my rise throughout the first half of the season. I love that city. I love the organization. And I am beyond ready to put that Battlehawks jersey on again. I love that there are athletes out there. First of all, it's cool just to be able to use social media in that way, right? We are able to attract attention to different issues or different things than we ever were before because of the social media. In the same timeline, actually, I saw somebody retweet an issue that Chris Pronger was having with his Uber service. So two different ways to use social media that I have found to be effective, because I've also gone to the social media route to try to make some things happen customer service wise, or just to gain the attention of a company. I'll tell you my best story without giving the company a name, but I bought a pair of shoes, and almost immediately after buying them, these were not dress shoes, not tennis shoes, kind of the cross between the two. So more of a casual shoe, but the sole was separating from the shoe on the inside as my foot bent where I was walking. And so I took to social media, to Twitter, that back then I think it was Twitter. I took to Twitter and made some mention, tagged that company. They immediately DM'd me and asked me to, you know, send a picture of one of the tags or something. And I'm not kidding you that within less than a week, I had a brand new pair of those shoes on my doorstep. So it was really cool. And it was that's my biggest success, probably, as it comes to the using the social media. But I did think it was funny to see Taylor Russolino really trying to make his case to come back to the Battlehawks. And so I think it's cool that he was using social media. I also think it's very cool that he wants to come back to St. Louis and play for the Battlehawks. And that just tells you something we already knew. It tells you what all you need to know about the fans and the organization that the Battlehawks are, and that the St. Louis fans are, and that it's hard to get any better. Certainly doesn't get any better in the UFL than the fans in St. Louis. And they proved that over and over during the last couple of seasons. And certainly even when you're talking about the playoff games that were in St. Louis, including the UFL championship game that was in St. Louis. But I thought that was really cool to kind of see that he wants to come back here, and he's trying to draw the attention. So we'll follow along there, and I will see where that goes and whether Taylor and the Battlehawks are reunited, and whether that strategy did him well and gets him a job coming up here in the 2024 season. 2025 season, I should say, which that schedule just came out, by the way. And there's going to be some Friday night games on the Battlehawks schedule this year, including they're going to open the season, the UFL season, on a Friday down in Houston. So that's kind of cool that they'll get that first Friday night game, and that Friday night is a new night for the UFL. And so to go along with some Saturday games and some Sunday games, we'll have some Friday games. The Battlehawks have 6 home games, and they're evenly split with 2 Fridays, 2 Saturdays, 2 Sundays. There's the Fridays are Friday night games. The Saturdays, they've got an evening game and an afternoon game. And the Sunday games, I think they may have a couple different afternoon times there as well. But really cool, and cool to add the Friday night. And I'm sure that part of that, or all of it, was predicated by TV and the TV contracts that they have. And they're going to again use Fox and FS1 and ABC and ESPN. And so all of those partners splitting up, and that works out, I guess, the best is to get some of those Friday night games. But I think that's pretty cool. But you get another night in there of UFL games. But also that means more exposure for the league, because, as I said, that is probably totally decided by the TV contracts and the fact that the TV contracts or the TV networks wanted the Friday night games added. So that's pretty cool. I have got to venture out for the first time tomorrow. I'm going to have to make my way from St. Louis over into over to Edwardsville. So I'm hoping that by tomorrow midday, MoDOT and IDOT have at least things in better condition. I know that they are. I know that MoDOT anyway is severely understaffed. So appreciate all those folks that are out there and getting to those roads. We finally got a county plow into our neighborhood today. We're an unincorporated area, so it's not like we're a high traffic area, and certainly not something that is, you know, of high importance either. But it was nice to see the plow come through here earlier today. But certainly appreciate all those guys and girls who are in the trucks and doing all that work so that we can get where we need to be. And I know tomorrow things will start to open up a little bit, and there'll be a lot more people needing to get a lot more places than probably there has been the last couple of days. I know a lot of schools are still off here over the, at least tomorrow. And so, but other things will start opening up. And as I said, we'll have to start moving and getting places more so than we have been over the last couple of days. We've got guests to get to here in the 7 o'clock hour. Nate Gatter is first up on that list, and he's going to join us and talk. We'll talk about a lot of things, but again, I want to just get an update from Nate Gatter and the things that he is doing here lately, because he's doing some really good things. And I think that's cool for our listeners to hear from him and catch up with him. So we'll do that when we come back. It's Joe Potts sitting in for Matt Pauly. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We'll take a break. We'll have Nate Gatter coming up on the other side of the break here on KMOX. We're back in on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Monday night. Glad you're along with us. As I mentioned, it's kind of accidentally become a lot of college football, basketball, a lot of college sports talk tonight. It doesn't have to be that with our next guest. We can talk a lot of stuff, and I haven't had a chance to catch up with Nate Gatter in quite a while, so I'm glad to do so tonight. You hear Nate, obviously you heard Nate a lot on the St. Louis City soccer report over the last couple of years. Nate has since gone on to do some college basketball, college football, even some NFL on national radio. Nate, thanks, man, for joining us tonight here on KMOX.
Joe, great to be with you.
I am so excited for all that you have gone on to do, and I don't think that you and I have had a chance to really catch up a lot. I know you just recently did an NFL game. How fun has it been, man, kind of relaunching the broadcast part of your career?
It's been great. You know, I think this is, as you know, better than a lot of people, it's a kind of business where it's easy to just kind of get stuck, I think. And, you know, the way that my career went was, you know, in some ways a blessing, but also a little bit of a curse, in that I had a few successes very, very early on, including one doing the Gateway Grizzlies, your former position some years ago, when I was still in college, actually my first year doing pro baseball. And so I was feeling like I was ahead of the curve. And then as these things sometimes happens in this business and in others, things ebb and flow. And, you know, those frustrations can start to mount. I think because we're in such a subjective business, there is no way to point at something. Like, I don't have sales numbers to point to and say, see, no matter what else was going on, or no matter what I might not have gotten or might have gotten, I can verify that I was this good this year, right? Like, there's no way to do that, because we work in a business where things are highly subjective, and good work is, while there are some objective touchstones, ultimately good from average, and especially separating good from great, is sort of in the eye of the beholder. And I think that can be a challenge if you feel like you're doing work that isn't getting out there or isn't getting in front of the right people. And you know, ultimately that it's a question of getting some good fortune at a particular time. And in my case, it was delayed long enough that I had to go through some of that frustration. But, you know, I wonder if in some ways that gives me a perspective now that I might not have had if this had worked out the same way 3 or 4 years earlier.
So what has been kind of what's been the biggest thrill? Because, like I said, I if I'm mistaken, correct me, but the first big assignments came with the NCAA tournament, right? NCAA basketball, went on to do a full slate of football from there. And then, as I mentioned, NFL recently.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think the biggest one, because in some ways, you know, it almost makes me feel like something players talk about when we in the media ask them about, you know, how they approach a particular stage or what's going through your mind when you get to live out this dream of some kind. Because in some ways, the biggest thrills are things I remember that I had to combat at the time, right? Because
sure.
you have to be ultimately wary of getting so thrilled by something that you can't do the job, right? It's kind of like being a player. They maybe can look around for a moment, but then you got to focus and do the job. And the fact that something is a cool personal moment for me can't be allowed to influence like how I'm doing the game. To that extent, the one that I remember feeling was the most difficult was the NCAA tournament. Because I did one game before that. I did the CAA men's basketball championship game
okay.
with Tom Crean in D.C. in March. And that was really cool. But then I was doing the first four in Dayton, speaking again of your old stomping ground, like a week later. And I remember my producer is a guy named Andy Garcia, and he said he's actually a play-by-play guy himself. He's the football and men's basketball radio voice of the Northern Illinois Huskies. So a lot of people heard his voice on the winning call of the upset over Notre Dame, which I imagine will live on even more greatly if Notre Dame ends up winning the national championship this year, and that's their only loss. But he was the producer for the game, and he said, you know, I'm going to have you sit here just partially so you can time out the billboards that we're going to read at the beginning of the broadcast, but also just so you can hear it. I'm going to have them in the studio play the open for you of like the 90 seconds or whatever, which is going to have the, you know, the big voiceover from David Lee, who does all the imaging work in his crazy deep Monster Jam voice for Westwood One. And you're going to hear the, you know, some of the highlights in the highlight montage of great moments in tournament history. You're going to hear the tournament music, all that, just so you can hear it. And I was like, okay, whatever. I didn't think anything about it. And then he played it, and it finished. And, you know, I kind of timed out the billboards, and we did all that. And we finished, and I said to him, I was like, I'm so glad that you did that, because I never would have thought of it. But if we had just done that live, and I had to hear that music and the toss to me for the first time live, I don't know if I could have handled it. Right? Like, that was just – it was kind of overwhelming. And just that the iconic music and all of that. And so I was really glad. So it's funny that the biggest thrill was not even like on the air. It was kind of in a rehearsal before we went on the air, but it allowed me, because it wasn't live, to sort of really feel it. And then it's just been the other milestones. I mean, college football is just a sport of pageantry and emotions and drama, right? And that it's these huge stadiums and epic buildup and all the history of the programs. And so being a part of some of those, you know, we were part of some really, really big games this year. Oregon and Ohio State stands out in October, Tennessee and Georgia in November, Ohio State and Michigan, the SEC championship game. I think all of those, just like huge stakes, big programs, packed stadiums. And then the NFL being the NFL, right? And that's the NFL kind of gets lost, because I did the Chargers and the Patriots in a maybe half full stadium in Foxborough, a game that didn't matter for the Patriots and sort of mattered for the Chargers in that they locked up a playoff spot, but that was really a foregone conclusion at that point. So it was something approaching a meaningless December game. And so it's a big deal to me because it is the NFL, but compared to all the other stuff that I got to do in 2024, the emotions of that moment felt a lot more manageable.
Really interesting. Well, it is for me. Maybe not so much for some others, but I appreciate that. And as I said, I'm thrilled for you. Nate Gatter's with us here. You hear him a lot here on KMOX. So let's keep it really with the college football, at least for right now. Do you feel like the committee did they get it right? Did they get it, or did they at least get it mostly right when it comes to the college football playoff?
I think they got it as right as they practically could.
Okay.
I do think there is some discussion that we're going to have about how the automatic seedings are going to work, because I do think requiring – I understand the sentiment and I appreciate the sentiment, but putting the 3 and 4 seeds into conference champions this year and probably at least sometimes in future years, certainly with a number 4 seed, results in sort of inorganic matchups, I think. And we don't necessarily want Ohio State and Oregon. It kind of worked out in that it was an old school Rose Bowl matchup in the Rose Bowl, whatever. But it, ordinarily, you wouldn't want those two teams to play each other in the quarterfinals, I don't think. So the committee got a little bit unlucky, and then I think there probably is some tinkering to do. My bet is ultimately we get to 16 teams eventually, because that just feels like where this is going, and some of this will take care of itself. I like that there are automatic bids for tied to conference champions, and I think there has to be at least one automatic spot for a group of five team, and that has to remain. I would be more open to tweaking that. For example, like in the current 12-team format, maybe we say, okay, the conference champions, the five highest-ranked conference champions are guaranteed to be in the top eight. So maybe they have to play in the first round, but they'll get a home game. They're not guaranteed a quarterfinal bye. And that, to me, would feel like it makes a little more sense. And I would have loved that, right? I think it'd be more fun rather than seeing Boise State get a bye. I'd rather see Boise State get a home game and a power conference team have to go out and play on the blue field in December. That'd be fun from a fan standpoint. As far as selection, I mean, the SEC noise, we cover the SEC a lot. I mean, at this point, it's the power two in college football. We all know that. I mean, almost every game we did on Westwood this year was Big Ten or SEC. And I, you know, I'm an SEC guy. That's my background. Like, this is not me hating on the SEC. The 9-3 SEC teams had no business being in the playoff. I'm glad they didn't get in. And it's been borne out. And I do think we're getting to a place, and I'm not somebody, I think if you're in media, you know that the vast majority of stuff about media favoritism is blown out of proportion. But I do think it's reasonable that the common fan is inherently skeptical of how ESPN covers the SEC, because ESPN and the SEC now have a business relationship the likes of which has never existed in college sports. The amount of money that ESPN and the SEC have wrapped up in each other, not to mention that then the college football playoff has wrapped up in both entities kind of in this weird love triangle, is really, really significant. And it's not unreasonable that the average fan would look at that at least with skepticism. And so then when you get Kirk Herbstreit, for whom I have an enormous amount of respect and who has forgotten more college football than I will ever hope to know, getting on national television after having just watched Tennessee lose by 25 points to Ohio State, and he says that an 11-win Big Ten team in Indiana didn't deserve to be in the playoff so that we could get 9-3 Alabama, who lost, didn't even score a touchdown in losing 24-3 to 6-6 Oklahoma, who I watched lose to Drew Pine and the Missouri Tigers. You're telling me that team has to go so badly that Indiana, with 11 wins and whose only loss came to an Ohio State team that now looks like the favorite to win the national title, Indiana can't go so that Alabama can go? That's crazy. And of course fans then are going to have that reaction. I mean, he said the words out loud that we shouldn't be getting so caught up on wins, right? That it's not about getting the most deserving teams in, that it's about getting the best teams in. And that is an insane thing to say. And I don't think that Kirk Herbstreit is getting messaging from the SEC. I don't think ESPN is getting messaging from the SEC. But I do think there develops an echo chamber.
Sure.
At a certain point, where if you hear people say the SEC is far and away the best conference in the country enough times, you start to just believe it as a fact, to the point that you think an 11-1 Indiana, who didn't play a super strong Big Ten schedule, don't get me wrong, but an 11-1 Indiana should be left out of the playoff, or any other similar team should be left out of the playoff. An 11-1 SMU, for instance, or 11-2, I guess they were, should be left out of the playoff, so that a 9-3 SEC team with multiple mediocre losses on its resume can get in. It does start to feel like home cooking to some degree, and ESPN has the power to influence a tremendous amount of the college football narrative. Like, no media entity at that level is as intertwined with one sport as ESPN is with college football, and specifically with the SEC. And I hope that this does not result in ESPN perpetuating that for years to come, because we want and should try to cultivate a more balanced college football to the degree that we can. And I would like to see us, if anything, pulling in the other direction, trying to counterbalance some of the power coalescence that's happening in the SEC and the Big Ten in the interest of the health of the sport, rather than leaning into it in a way that then makes it seem like nobody else should bother playing football, and maybe even the middle part of the Big Ten shouldn't bother playing football.
Man, I appreciate the very in-depth answer. Nate Gatter's with us here. And before I let you go, I do want to get your opinion on Olaf Melberg, named the permanent replacement for Bradley Carnell as the St. Louis City head coach. What do you know about him? Do you know anything about him? What is your thoughts there?
What I know is that the results are a little bit underwhelming on paper. In his previous managerial experience. What I also know is that there's a lot I don't know in terms of all the context that was going on around that club and around their position in the table. And what I also know is that, and I don't want this to sound wrong, because I think the manager is important. I think Bradley Carnell was important. I think John Hackworth was and is important. And I think that Olaf Melberg will be important. Ultimately, St. Louis City's identity is dictated by Lutz Pfannenstiel. Right.
Mm-hmm, right.
As compared to, say, a club like, now this has changed, I would have said that, you know, in Philadelphia, say, Jim Curtin had a sort of outsized impact on that club. He and Ernst Tanner were leading it together, but Jim Curtin felt like the primary guy. Obviously, that's changed now with him leaving Philadelphia and the aforementioned Bradley Carnell now announced to be taking over as the union's new manager, where I think he'll do well. That strikes me as a very good fit. I think St. Louis City, as has been the case from the very beginning, in a sporting sense, and even in some non-sporting senses, revolves around Lutz Pfannenstiel. Carolyn Kindle has entrusted him with the keys to the entire organization, and as long as he is in St. Louis, which I expect all parties involved would like to be for quite some time, he is going to dictate how things happen in the club. And that doesn't mean that he's telling managers what they can and can't do. It means he's hiring managers who are still going to work in the image that he sees for the club, down to playing style in areas that we might see identify more ordinarily with a manager. And that's evidenced by John Hackworth's former position in director of coaching, which was primarily about streamlining the message and making sure the message was being properly communicated and conveyed, not just through the first team coaching staff and through the St. Louis City 2 coaching staff, but all the way down to the teenage rungs of the academy, that the players throughout the club, even at the lowest levels, were getting the same messaging. They were getting in a clear-cut way, and that would allow a seamless transition for a player from the under-16s up to the under-19s or whatever, up to the second team, up to the first team, ultimately, in one day. I don't think that has changed significantly. Will we see some tweaks to playing style? Potentially. I mean, I think the results last season indicate that it might be worth exploring an approach that isn't quite so adverse to possessing the ball. And I wonder if that might be something that continues, because I thought John Hackworth found a good balance. To be honest, I was thinking he had a really good chance at the job. I'm glad they've been able to retain him, even though he didn't get the full-time job.
Right.
I guess my ultimate answer is, I think that Lutz Pfannenstiel is ultimately the head guy in charge, and fans shouldn't expect any dramatic changes to playing style or the management of personnel as long as he's in charge.
Excellent. That's kind of what I figured. That's I have said as much, you know, going back to, you know, what kind of influence Pfannenstiel has. So I appreciate that. And great just to catch up. Like I said, I'm thrilled for you and everything that's come your way. And I wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully we'll see you around as the summer comes back here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Looking forward to that as well, Joe, and glad, even if it became more play-by-play and media world answers maybe than you were expecting, it was good to chat.
No worries whatsoever, Nate, man. That's much appreciated. Nate Gatter with us here. You hear him here on KMOX. You hear him on Westwood One Sports. Great to catch up with him. We'll take a break. Randy Mullen's coming up on the other side of the break. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Jill Pott in for Matt Pauly, coming right back on KMOX. Joe Pott back in on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. And in for Matt Pauly tonight is a little bit under the weather, so hopefully he's recovering, recuperating, resting, all of those things that you need to do on this snowy, cold Monday here in St. Louis. We'll keep things moving. A lot of college, as I said, tonight, and we'll keep that going here with our next guest. That is Randy Mullen. You hear him. Well, you hear him here often, but you also hear him in the building at Faurot Field, Memorial Stadium. He is the in-house PA voice for the Mizzou Tigers. You also hear him a lot at Mizzou Arena because he is doing more and more of their public address. He is the radio voice of the women's basketball team at SIUE, and he's done a lot of men's games for me over the years. So, Randy, thanks for joining us tonight. Thank you on short notice especially.
I appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for having me.
For sure. You and I have chatted a little bit about it. I know you've had a chance to talk about it elsewhere, but and I talked about it a lot more last week when I was on, but it certainly feels like it's a feel-good ending to the Missouri Tigers season, going to Nashville, winning the bowl, Brady Cook going out the way that he did, and getting to 10 wins again, back-to-back seasons, which is not the norm. That does not happen every day. This was a really good end to another good season for Eli Drinkwitz and the Tigers.
First time since 2013-14 that they had double-digit wins. You know, it's funny. You keep hearing the words from fans, oh, you know, it was a disappointing season. And I don't know when 10-3 became disappointing. 11-2 last year, obviously, Cotton Bowl victory, beat Ohio State, brand, even though maybe they didn't have all of their starters playing in that game, but you beat a brand name in the Cotton Bowl, with one of the biggest bowls in the country, and you finish in the top 10. And I get it. Excuse me. Everybody thinking, well, you know, it's a preseason top 10 ranking, and Missouri, you know, they do what they do last year. They're in the playoff, and they were one game worse. And that's quote-unquote disappointing. I thought it was a great season. Couple of rough road games at A&M and at Alabama, and that's really what did Missouri in, regardless of how South Carolina ended. But, you know, unlike, you know, I was listening to Nate Gatter previous as you were chatting with him, and, you know, unlike these other SEC schools who made a social media claim to a playoff spot, teams like Ole Miss and South Carolina and Alabama, they all lost to teams they were not supposed to lose to, and Missouri beat every team on their schedule they were supposed to beat. So I think it was a great year and a good bowl win, the only SEC win versus the Big Ten in the bowls. And Missouri got that win against Iowa. And, it, you know, I get that the bowl season's a little less important if you're not in the playoff. Totally understand that. It makes total sense. But, you know, anytime you can play for a 10th win and you've got a bunch of seniors that are invested and they want to play their last game at Missouri and you can get a win versus a Big Ten opponent, that's a big deal.
Yeah, you bring up a point. Jacob Sersosimo was on with us last week before, I think it was before the game, but he said that it should say something about the program and about Eli Drinkwitz that the number of players that wanted to play in this game. And obviously we know there was guys making they had made the decision. They're going to the NFL. Fine. They're going to sit. And we know Luther Burden, III, one of them who was on the sideline in uniform. So that was great. But the number of guys that stayed on you know, practiced for the extra 3 weeks that went and played in that game. And then obviously the way they came back in that game, this clearly was not a game. Nobody was taking this game lightly.
No. And they were competitive. They fought, you know, and you know, they played in the image of their quarterback. I mean, Brady Cook will be forever known as, I don't know if you're going to think of him in the as far as being having as natural or as much talent, pure talent, as a Brad Smith or a Blaine Gabbert or a Chase Daniel. But you're not going to find another quarterback that had more heart and grit and determination and leadership than him. And the team mirrored him. I mean, especially in that game, it was you have several games this year. You're down against Auburn. Brady Cook runs to the hospital to get an x-ray, comes back, leads you on two touchdown drives to win the game. This team took on the persona of their quarterback this year, and that's how they got to 10 wins.
Randy Mullman with us here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Monday evening. Glad you're along with us as well. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk some Missouri basketball. Obviously, so you go back 2 years to Dennis Gates' first year, which was you know, clearly the idea was we're going to load up on transfers. We're going to get some experience, and obviously took it a very good season into the a second round of the NCAA tournament. Last year was a down year, which we knew was going to be probably not as down as we thought. But this year, right back up. This has been a really good basketball team. I know they had a tough one against Auburn, but my goodness, it's Auburn. And I can't imagine playing on the road in the SEC, but Dennis Gates as well has things moving in the right direction, I feel like.
He does. And, you know, I'm sort of privileged enough to have a seat right there on at the scorer's table, and I get to kind of watch him and listen to him. And he's always teaching. He's never in a player's face, embarrassing anybody. He's teaching, he's talking, he's coaching, he's mentoring. And yes, last year, I think everyone knew it was going to be a little bit of a down year. I don't obviously think it was ever, anyone thought it would be as down as it was, but you know, this year you've got Mark Mitchell, who's transferred from Duke, and he's a Kansas City native. They've got a point guard in Anthony Robinson that's really coming into his own now, who fills up a stat sheet. They got this an instant offense off the bench in Marquez Warwick, who comes from Northern Kentucky, a mid-major, where he just was one of the top scoring players in the country, and he comes off the bench and he just lights it up. They've got some real pieces this year, and they're going to be very interesting, but it's a lot of new faces and a lot of gelling that still needs to happen. And everyone says, well, that's what the non-conference schedule is for. They played three Power Four teams in non-conference. Mm-hmm. And that was Illinois, Cal, and Kansas. They won two of those three games. And so now you're getting into the meaningful part of the schedule. The SEC could get, Joe, 10, 11, maybe 12 teams. That's how deep the conference is. And so now every single game you're playing, it seems like a ranked team every week, every game. And they opened up at number two Auburn, and Auburn lived up to their ranking, but they get LSU on Tuesday, tomorrow night. And I just think they're going to be a very interesting team because they have so many interesting pieces.
Yeah, I was looking at the SEC again before the new year, before anybody had started conference play, and I think there were a combined 3-4 losses or something in the conference. It was ridiculous. I think Illinois is really, really good. Mizzou obviously played them toe-to-toe. They beat Kansas when Kansas was number one. I mean, you didn't mention Memphis. I think Memphis is a good program as well. They opened the year with Memphis. Sure. So, you know, not a Power Four, but so yeah, I definitely think things are on the right track there. Okay, so I mentioned you also do a women's basketball game. You're around women's basketball for SIUE. You're around SIUE a lot. Like any other conference, the Ohio Valley Conference is a tough conference to navigate and certainly tough to win on the road. You've seen the men's team at SIUE. Where do you think the Cougars stack up?
Well, Coach Barone, first of all, has done such a great job. Getting players to buy into his defensive style. And we talk so much about offense. They're the number one defensive team in the OVC. He's gotten Rayshon Taylor, who was a St. Louis metro area kid from Collinsville. He's battled a couple of injuries, but he's gotten him. I'm sure Rayshon Taylor has had opportunities to enter the portal, how talented he is, to maybe take his talents to a higher level or power four level conference. But he has stayed at SIUE, stayed in the OVC, stayed with Coach Barone. He's one of the top players in the conference. And if you're in St. Louis and you love college basketball, if you're in the metro area and you have not gone to an SIUE game to go check out the way this team plays, and Rayshon Taylor in particular, one of the stalwarts for the Cougars, who is now the Division I leading scorer of all time in SIUE school history. Do yourself a favor and go watch SIUE. You know, they beat St. Louis University a couple of seasons ago at Chaffetz. This is not this is not your grandfather's SIUE, Joe. This is a legitimate contender for an NCAA tournament bid in the Ohio Valley Conference. And let's be honest, the Ohio Valley Conference has gotten to a point now, and a lot of these mid-major conferences have gotten better and better because of the transfer portal. I know I was one that was saying several years ago when this portal was really starting to take off, I know a lot of people who cover college basketball nationally were saying, "Oh, you know, the rich is going to get richer." I didn't see it that way. I thought we would see a lot of really good players who would go to Power Four teams, end up or high level community college teams or junior college teams, end up in mid major conferences, which would boost the profile of those conferences, boost the competition in those conferences, and really make them legitimate threats when they get into the NCAA tournament. And I think we're seeing it unfolding, and the OVC is one of those conferences.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. I feel that way, and like we said, and I was talking about this with Earl Austin Jr. at the top of the show, that it just proves it's conference basketball, no matter what conference you're in, whether it's the SEC or the OVC, it is tough. It's difficult to navigate. A little shorter than I wanted it to be tonight, but I appreciate you jumping on, especially because it was short notice. Always appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you. And I know you and I will be back on the road tomorrow for men's and women's OVC basketball at EIU. But thanks again, man, for jumping on tonight.
No problem, Joe. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, buddy.
Sounds great. Randy Molman with us here. We'll got to wrap up this edition of the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We'll do it on the other side of the break. Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauly here on this Monday night. And we will wrap things up on the other side on Camo X.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on Camo X.
It's Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly tonight. And Matt under the weather, so he is... hopefully back tomorrow. I will not be here. If Matt is not, it will be somebody else in this spot. But either way, of course, we'll always have you covered here on KMOX. But hopefully this day down has helped Matt and given him the opportunity to start to feel a little bit better. As I mentioned, I will be on the road with SIUE basketball. They're back on the road tomorrow with Eastern Illinois. Cougars have won two in a row. And as you heard, both from Earl Austin Jr. and from Randy Molman, Rayshon Taylor from Collinsville, Illinois, who is now in his graduate year. He's played four seasons. He actually injured himself in the summer before his true freshman year. So he didn't even get a true freshman year. I had a knee injury. But he has come back to play 4 years, four seasons over 5 years in the same program. And it says as much about him as it does the program and the university and everything that is the way everything is trending for SIUE, SIUE athletics, and certainly for men's basketball. Brian Baroni also had two twins last year graduate after playing five full years, counting the COVID year, in the program as well. But it's a great brand of basketball. They're 9-6 overall. They just won a couple of games at home to get back to even in the conference, 2-2. And they're back home on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock against Tennessee Tech. So I would invite everybody to come out. Thanks so much to our guests tonight, Earl Austin Jr., Jerry Palm from CBS Sports, Nate Gatter from here on Camo X, but also Westwood One Sports, Randy Molman, who does so much work at Mizzou and a lot of stuff for us at SIUE. Great to catch up with all of them. Big thanks to Kyle Sixta, who put it all together. And again, we had some, it was a little bit of short notice, but we appreciate all the guests jumping on and chatting with us tonight. I had a good time chatting with you. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well. As I said, hopefully Matt Pauly back tomorrow. Hope he's getting better and feeling better. But happy to sit in the chair for the evening. I'm Joe Pott. Keep it here on Camo X.